hey, you're back on Filter, or I'm back, or somebody's back, and you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM. Basically the only show on this station, Filter, where we listen to music, we talk to people, and right now we're going to talk to a man, person, thing named Jake Beatty. Jake, are you there?
I'm here.
You're here, finally. Ah, we did it.
It's been years.
I know. I think the last time you and I really had a conversation, we were like eating dinner separately at Alchemy, and we just ended up talking about all the things that you should be doing and I should be doing with our lives or with our businesses.
And I think we followed up on all of that too. So, you know, 100%.
We did great. Yeah. And then we had nothing to talk about for about 8 or 9 years. And now here we are. It can't have been that long, but yeah.
Well, I remember the last part of that conversation was, you know what, let's get back together again if there's a pandemic and you have a radio show. I was like, sold.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good reason for us to talk again, I think. Like, you know, you're absolutely, we were prescient and we're smart people and everybody else should know it. So let's spend 40 minutes or so talking to each other so everybody realizes how great we are, okay?
Great. Perfect.
That's a good plan. So a little background. Well, tell us about you, Jake. You know, you're the executive director of the Northwest Maritime Center. How and why did you end up in Port Townsend? Was it for that job?
You know, I actually lived here in my 20s. I was working kind of as an outward bound instructor out of Anacortes, and then I would also work commercially on boats where I'd like take freight to a weird little Alaskan fishing villages and stuff. So we take up like, you know, fishing bait and things and all the things fishermen need, like cigarettes and beer and porn, and we bring back all the fish. And so I could live anywhere, and all my friends lived here. So I think I was one of 9 residents of what was known as the Adams House at the time. So right next to the Annapurna, it used to be like there was 9 of us who lived there. And then I left for a while and then came back for the job. Yeah.
So the Adams House, was that, were you basically shed boys, or was that an actual like house living situation?
No, it was a 2-story Victorian with, you know, at least 4 rooms. So I think there was a child conceived there, or at least brought to term there. I mean, it was great. I came back for the end of that era when they actually went back into sort of, you know, the owner living there again. It was a reverse potluck because so many people had lived there they just had accumulated furniture. So you had to show up with food to share and then you had to leave with a piece of furniture.
That's amazing. So a reverse potluck, I've literally never heard of that, but maybe it's never existed except at the Adams House.
It was a magic moment.
Oh, that's awesome. Do you ever go by that house and want to go in and just barge in and see your old stomping grounds?
I mean, it'd be pretty fun, but you know, it was such a great place to live. There's still a bunch of people in town who live there. Actually, one of your coworkers lived there. Jim Fox lived there.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
Yeah, Jim and Nicole lived there. Yeah, it was great. So there's a bunch of people who are connected by this one weird cohabitation experience.
That's great. And you're bonded together forever.
Yeah, totally.
Well, so it's housing in Port Townsend isn't quite like that anymore, but we don't really need to get into that yet. Or maybe
no
we will.
No kidding.
Later.
Yeah.
But I mean, I long for those days. And I mean, how much did you, can I ask how much you paid for rent?
I can't remember. I want to say it was like $600 for the whole house. So
each
bedroom, I think, was $150.
Oh my God. Yeah, you make my moving here cheap rent story not even worth telling. Because although you did have 4 roommates, I guess, but you know.
No, I had 8 roommates.
Or 8 roommates. Okay, yeah. So my other question on your biography is one you don't have to answer, but like who decided what kind of porn the sailors got?
We just delivered it. We had no editorial oversight.
Okay. I'm just making sure. So yeah, you were just filling orders. You were just the middleman in that strange relationship.
I mean, at the time we were kind of like early UPS of the sea, but that's about it.
I love that. That's something to aspire to. And UPS still probably isn't as effective as you guys were in terms of providing sailors with the relief that they needed.
Well, that's a loaded question.
Take that, UPS.
It was an awkward word choice.
Yes, you're right. I didn't think about relief until it was too late. So moving on.
How do you spell relief?
Pretty soon I will have relief at my position as a DJ here.
Yeah, right. Phil, it's been great. This has been a great show.
Yeah. Phil's coming back.
Can't wait to go out.
COVID's over. So let's talk about COVID. Let's get the stuff out of the way that I think is valuable, but at the same time is not talking about ramen, which I plan on doing with the whole second half with you. So Wooden Boat Festival is a hands-on, like very something that you pretty much are present for. You're looking at boats, you're going on boats, you're listening to music, you're eating food. It is like the definition of a not COVID friendly event in my mind. So how, but you guys have come up with a solution. You've come up with plans. Tell us about the process when you realized there wouldn't be a Wooden Boat Festival in the traditional sense and how you basically set your goals and work to creating the solution.
Yeah, well, it's like everybody. I feel like this spring was just this slow avalanche of dread, right? So like as COVID rolled out and it was sort of the panic moment and then realizing that past the panic was going to be just a really long, long thing. I mean, the decision to cancel the Wooden Boat Festival was just a heartbreaker just because it's been such a foundational piece of our community for a really long time. It's why I came to the town first time. And it's just such a joyous thing.
And it's the first time canceled, right? Ever.
Oh yeah. Right. So it ran for 43 festivals, like clockwork. It was a really big decision. And it was another one of those where, at least for me and some of the responses I saw, it was in that moment, you know, we canceled it early. It was still April, I think. Mm. And it was just, you know, we had to make a decision based on all the tents, and there's just a ton of expense and work that goes into doing it. And we just kind of read the writing on the wall that there's a big enough chance we can't go forward. But that was like that for all of the stuff. You know, the Maritime Center is an experience-based institution. So everything we do in one way or another is related to people having experiences in real life. And most of what we do is, you know, gathering people in either classrooms or on board boats or in big community celebrations or in races and having like person to person interactions and interactions with the sea. And we've really had to just unlearn that a little bit and take a step back and say like, well, what can we do to be of service and how can we use this moment to do some stuff that we've always wanted to do? There's got to be some lemonade out of this whole experience. So I think we decided we were going to do a virtual festival. I mean, we're still figuring out how to do a virtual festival. No, it's the 12th.
Oh, okay. Okay, I should know this.
But I appreciate you doing your homework. Well, I do appreciate it.
It's like sometime. It's happening.
Yeah. It's happening the same. So the festival is always the weekend after Labor Day, and we just decided to continue with that tradition. But it's been really fun. So it's probably more like it's turning into something that is more like a bunch of online content. And I mean, there's probably 70 hours of finished footage. And some of that is around some mini documentaries. We actually hired filmmakers to make some local, some from elsewhere. Mm. So there's new original content that's out there. Some we just sort of curated content from around the world. Some of that's about cool boats and things happening. Some of that's about experiences in our own, you know, backyard. We used the opportunity to, because you can't really recreate like what Point Hudson feels like and the vibe down there during the festival online. But there is kind of this really cool community thing that's happening where we're getting people reaching out to us from New Zealand, and there's one from Albania.
Whoa.
Some New Zealanders, some folks from Denmark and Sweden. There's museums across the country that have decided to do some, you know, show us their collection a little bit. And we've actually got some people who, some, you know, designers and famous, you know, in the biz, famous boat builders like Sam Devlin, who giving like video tours of their boat shops or their design studios or things that, you know, we couldn't really do in a, you know, a live festival, like a normal festival.
Yeah.
But because we've shifted, we've gotten this interesting participation, a more global participation in exhibitors, and also like some things you never get to behind the scenes if you're relegated to a 10x10 tent that you stand up and put down. So there's some really interesting opportunities, and I'm pretty jazzed about it, actually.
That's actually some really serious lemonade. I mean, like, thinking about it from this perspective, that in order to, feel like you weren't just throwing away or not doing anything, you may have created something that could exist beyond the pandemic and be a feature of the Wooden Boat Festival, forevermore, and maybe connect more people to it, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea. You know, one of the things that, unless you're really a hardcore festival goer, you might not know is that, in addition to all the boats and the dancing and the food and stuff, there's a lot of there's over 100 presentations a year that are live and sort of in classrooms, that it's content that we've done an okay job about capturing on video or making available to some of our members or things. But this is the idea we've always had. Like, we could really do a better job at that. Mm-hmm. And this is maybe a way to evolve that idea. Like, I was just previewing some of the content last night. My daughter and I, my daughter's almost five, we watched this video from Norway about, like, traditional hemp rope making. I think three times. She just wanted to keep watching it. But it's fascinating the way they take hemp strands, they put it into, like, threads, and then they weave the threads into, like, these yarns, and the yarns get twisted into this, like, rope, and it's just super cool.
Okay, so maybe your daughter might actually be cooler than my daughter's now, because I think mine would make me turn on like Booba or Masha and the Bear if I tried to watch a rope weaving video. But I haven't tried, so maybe I'll have to get tickets and go find out if I do have a kid as cool as yours.
My kid might just be someone who's just interested for any excuse or screen time. Also, I don't know.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's. That maybe I'm just going to tell myself it's that. my kids are still cool, but that's really awesome. So, and you're getting, she doesn't even know it. She's getting a special preview of content that's only exclusively going to be available during a set period of time, right? That during the Wooden Boat Festival.
Well, most of the content's going to be available for a month because, a 1-day festival, it is mathematically impossible to watch all 70 hours of content. But there is going to be sort of a live and hosted part that is from 8 to I think about 7. It's a long day where it's going to be almost like a film festival / Olympics, where we have like some hosts who introduce the films, and then we have a film Q&A afterwards, and then there's some demonstrations that are live. So all that will be live, and it kind of, the festival kind of ends with the traditional She Tells, Sea Tales event that we put on every year, but this year, which is like female mariners and boat builders and coming, telling their stories of the sea, which is one of my favorite events we put on. We had to cancel it this year too. So we're doing a virtual version of that.
So that'll be live? And
then, no, it's been pre-recorded, okay. But there'll be a live Q&A afterwards.
Got it.
And then the kind of ends in Zach Carver, who's been made our films for the Race to Alaska. He's done all our video works from the beginning. He got enough funding and to turn that into a feature length documentary that's going to be. So I think this is its online premiere, but it's really good. So it's a 90-some-minute documentary about the Race to Alaska, which is super fun.
Awesome. So I want to talk, before we talk about ramen after the break, we'll talk a little bit about the Race to Alaska and what happened there. But you brought a song for us. It's a long one, but I feel like we just need to get down and...
Can I send you a link for a better version? Can I do that right now?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Are you sure? Okay. Yeah, because I got the 9-minute and 45 one.
Set it off one.
Vocal. Yeah, that's the one I got. You think that's the right one?
Let's try this other one.
Okay. Send it to me now. And in the meantime, why don't you plug how people can get tickets for the Wooden Boat Festival?
Yeah, sure. That's great. Thanks. Virtualwbf.org or com. Let me look. I bet it's an org. Virtualwbf.org. And that's got kind of a preview of a lot of the content and has instructions about buying tickets and things. Virtualwbf.org.
Unfortunately, there was no race to Alaska this year, Jake Beatty. Is that that's the case, right?
What is the segue logic there, Paul?
Well, it's not dead, but it died for this year. You know, it didn't happen this year. The R2AK race to it, do you like calling it R2AK, or do you just call it the race, or do you just call it your genius creation that that is beloved by people all over the world?
I never the last one. I think I alternate between the first two.
Okay. So, Race to Alaska, for people who don't know, and you correct me if I get it wrong, but this is a race where people can use pretty much any means on water that doesn't include an engine, like a fossil fuel burning engine, to get from Port Townsend to Ketchikan, Alaska. Is that what the Race to Alaska is?
That's correct.
Whew. Oh man, I did my homework.
Nice job.
Thanks. So that wasn't possible this year.
No, I mean, if one huge barrier is that the border's closed.
Oh yeah.
The other one is we just didn't feel even if it wasn't given the health conditions and just how at the time even now like, the disease spreads through a circulation of people and a lot of the communities that we go through. Are super big fans of the race, but also tiny. The BC coast, like, is, you know, a lot of these places, like, there's not actually communities, but when there are, they're, you know, they don't have hospital beds, and we didn't want the narrative to change from all these people, like, loving the race so much that they, like, stocked teams. Like, when a team pulls in, their tracker's on a beach nearby, like, there's so many stories of, like, racers saying, I was just there, like, camping, and all of a sudden, like, out of the woods came this, family with like a pie for me and they just want to talk to me about the race.
Oh my God.
We didn't want to change that sort of like love affair that the people on the race course have for the race with the why are you bringing this disease into my poorly staffed medical facility.
This is good because you want to export love and passion for for non-motorized boat craft, not for spreading COVID-19 to communities around the coast.
Yeah, like human to human connection that you don't have to worry about the aerosol effect. Yeah, exactly.
And I guess, yeah, then there was no way to really adequately Zoom for people to Zoom race or, you know, make it something, make it anything different. It just had to, it had to be paused and it'll come back next year, COVID providing, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, we're still in the beginning phases of thinking through what that might look like. You know, there's certainly contingency plans of what if it can't happen at all, or what if it can happen, but with family unit teams, or what if we can do mostly the race, but we can't have any of the in-person parties beforehand, or the, you know, the big ruckus at street party that happens the day before the race. And so we're still thinking all that through, but yeah, we're planning on it happening next year.
Okay, good. I wanted to note one thing that if I have said to you in person, if you've ever seen me and we're 6 feet apart, and this is talking to the greater audience of four people that are listening right now, if I've ever said a Merry COVID to you, I have to acknowledge that I got that from Jake Beatty. And it's still one of the funniest, and I've gotten so many laughs out of a Merry COVID to you. I just have to say you deserve some accolades for that. And I
stole it from Daniel Evan. So I pass on the accolades back to him. Who's the Race to Alaska race boss?
Okay, there you go. So Daniel Evans, really the originator of a Merry COVID to you. God bless you, sir. Thank you so much for this, the best greeting of all time, at least during the pandemic. I guess my other question for you before we get into ramen is, can I have that set of steak knives that was going to go to the second place this year?
Oh, you think we have them on hand? No, we run a tight ship. Once we lined out that expense item, we don't have those knives this year. So,
oh, man,
no,
well, it was worth a shot.
Thank you.
So yeah. we're gonna close it up by saying, Jake Beatty, what is your favorite way? What's your favorite brand of ramen, I guess, or just flavor? You know, it doesn't have to be brand. And how do you prepare it? In a way, but what's your favorite way to prepare it?
I mean, is there more than one way to prepare ramen?
Yes. Are you kidding me? Is that a real question?
I mean, I am the boring, like, just pour the water in guy. But like, there are, there are, I guess I've met some students I worked with years ago who would just put the flavor packet right onto the noodles and eat it, which I was interesting, but not great.
Yeah, no, it's not good. You know, my friend Tess taught me that in seventh grade. She came with like a Ziploc baggie and a ramen thing, and she just crunched up the ramen in the bag and like, or she didn't have a Ziploc baggie. She just crunched it up in the bag and then poured the seasoning packet in and mixed it in. She was like, these are my chips.
And snorted it.
I wish she would have. But you know, it's actually better to not snort it, and also better to not put the seasoning packet on it if you're going to eat it dry, honestly. Like, if you're going to go that route. Yeah, I mean, the seasoning packet really needs to be dissolved in water, if you ask me. Absolutely. But then there's a question of when do you put the seasoning packet in? So some people really like to put the seasoning packet in through the whole cooking process. I know some people who add it in the last minute. And I'm kind of a last minute sort of person. I don't want to cook it the whole time, but I'll definitely put it in for the last minute. Especially if I'm going to
describe the flavor profile difference between last minute and, I mean, that spectrum of season packet adding timeline.
Yeah. So it really does have to do with how much it absorbs into the noodles. You know, and kind of the balance of, you know, cause the noodles are going to just soak up the water, and if the water seasoned from the beginning, you know, they're just going to be, you know, saltier, and, you know, not necessarily more pleasant noodles if they're cooking in the seasoning the whole time. That's my, opinion.
You lose like the floral notes and sort of that tobacco, that sort of terroir nuance that you would not get otherwise. Yeah,
it's true. It's true. You see, you're a man who knows. So you're telling me that you just pour water, you boil water, you put the noodles in, and then when they're done cooking, you set a timer, and then you pour the seasoning packet in and you mix it up.
It depends though, because, like my favorite brand, back to that question, is the Big Bowl Noodle brand, which might even be Korean. So I don't know if that classifies as ramen or not, but it's an instant noodle. So,
is it the Shin Ramyun? Is that the one you're talking about?
I think so.
Are they spicy?
Big Bowl Noodles. The only thing I remember.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are they spicy? I guess that's my question.
Yeah, they are spicy.
Yeah. Yep. So those are good. I know those are Ruby Fitch's favorite. And I like them sometimes, but for me, I need, I'm just going to use this chance to tell you how you should be making your ramen. If it's not the Shin Ramyun, because that one really is like already seasoned, it's hard to really do anything with it except maybe poach an egg in it. I mean, and so are you an egg person in ramen or just in general?
No, I like the egg, but I can't cook it in because I don't like the idea. And I can't vouch for the flavor of the eggshell, that sort of sulfur flavor, getting into the ramen. I don't know if that actually happens or not, but I just for fear of it, I wouldn't cook the egg in the ramen.
Well, you should not put the shell of the egg. You should not put the whole egg in the ramen. You should either cook the egg separately, right? Soft boil it, or you should crack the egg into the ramen at the last minute and sort of poach it and leave it to kind of poach in the broth. That's my opinion. Although lately, this is, you know, I'm taking advantage of you not having enough information about how you like, or not having enough specificity about how you like your ramen to tell you that you should poach the egg in it, and then you stir it all up so the egg kind of dissolves. And then you put some butter in it, like a little thing of butter, and a slice of American cheese.
Shut up.
And then, yeah, seriously. And then put sesame seeds on that, and maybe a little scallion, like chopped green onion, and stir all that together. Salivating hard
and
now.
Then throw it away.
No, it's really? So good. Yes, I 100%. I have
American cheese.
Absolutely, it can be Kraft singles. You could get the fancier stuff from Safeway, you know, deli, or don't go to any particular restaurant or any particular place. I'm not promoting anything FCC. Just saying that's where you could find it, not where I go. Put a slice of American cheese on it. I swear to you, the American cheese, in Asian food. Is more popular for me than American cheese has ever been really in American food. And it's because it mixes so well with the noodles, and it just, oh man, it's so good. Trust me.
My God, I'm so excited about this. This is a new, I feel like I've just peeked into Narnia.
That's what it's like being in my mind, Jake Beatty. Do you have any shout-outs before I kick you off the air?
I think I would just like to acknowledge Barb Traylor, who's the festival director. And I know we're not talking about the virtual festival anymore, but the thing I didn't get to do during that portion of the show was just really just, it's a really big thing to put on the Wooden Boat Festival in a normal year. And undoing that and then redoing something entirely and basically coming up with something that's between a film festival online and like the Olympics / a telethon is, it's been a lot of work. And I've just been impressed by how much she cares about this town, the Wooden Boats, the people, and just keeping the vibe going. So Barb Traylor, thanks for existing.
Nice work, Barb Traylor. And thank you for everything you do. And where can people go again to buy tickets for the virtual Wooden Boat Festival, Jake?
It's virtualwbf.org.
Right. Well, even if you're not a boat person, consider going. You know, your money will go to good use. And we need the Wooden Boat Foundation. We need the Northwest Maritime Center in Port Townsend, keeping culture alive. And I was going to say keeping tourism alive, but nobody wants to hear me say that right now. but either way, you're supporting great folks like Barb and Jake. And Jake, thank you so much for being here today and bringing a 10-minute song and Rickrolling me.
Thanks for having me, Paul. It was fun.
Yeah, we'll do it
before another 8 years happens.
Yes, let's not do 8 years again, or 10 or 7 or however many it was. We'll go sooner. All right, awesome. Bye, Jake.